Hare Krishna. Good morning to everyone. So with your permission, we'll continue on with Chaitanya Charitamrita. Pray for your blessings. Maharaj, your permission as well. And we continue reading from the Madhya Leela of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter number 3, entitled Lord Chaitanya at the House of Advaita Acharya. On the board is text number 216. So I'll just read 213 to 215, and then we'll do 216 together. So this is text number 213. As we were reading yesterday, Mahaprabhu is now about to leave Shantipur and head for Jagannath Puri. And he is having his final interaction with Advaita Acharya before he leaves for Jagannath Puri. Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shri Gauranitai Bhagavan ki jai. Text 213. After he had followed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for some distance, Advaita Acharya was petitioned by him with folded hands. The Lord spoke the following sweet words. Just a side note, apparently it said in Vedic culture that if an enemy comes to your place and leaves, then you should at least stay at the door until he's left. If a friend comes, then when they're leaving, you should walk at least to the vehicle that they're going to, and then they can leave. And if it's a very good friend, then you should walk halfway to the place they're going to. Of course, it's not allowed during the lockdown time, but... Text 214. So Advaita Acharya was walking with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, following him, wanting to go to Jagannath Puri with him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Please pacify all the devotees and my mother. If you become agitated, no one will be able to continue to exist." Saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Advaita Acharya and stopped him from following any further. Then, without anxiety, he proceeded to Jagannath Puri. Text 216. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. The Lord, with four other persons, went along the banks of the Ganges, through the path of Chatraboga, towards Niladri, Jagannath Puri. Purport. In the southern section of the Eastern Railway, in the district of 24 Parganas, is a station named Magrahat. If one goes to the southeastern side of that station for some 14 miles, there is a place called Jayanagara. About 6 miles south of this Jayanagara station is a village named Chatrabhog. Sometimes this village is called Kadi. In this village is a deity of Lord Shiva known as Vajur Kanath. A festival takes place there every year during the month of Chaitra, March to April. The festival is known as Nanda Mela. At the present moment, the Ganges does not flow there. On the same railway line is another station known as Baruipur, and near this station is another place called Atisar. Formerly, this village was also situated on the banks of the Ganges. One can go from this village to Panihati and from there to Varahanagar, north of Calcutta. In those days, the Ganges flowed to the south of Calcutta through Kali Ghat, which is still known as Adi Ganga. From Baruipur, the Ganges branched out and flowed through the Diamond Harbour near the Mathurapur's police station. It is to be noted that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passed through all these places on his way to Jagannath Puri. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is giving us a lot of geographical information. This station, 14 miles south of this place. If you go there behind this village, then there's this. One may think, why, what is the need for all this information? Why is this a travel map or is this a theological book? Of course, it's said that the purports of Srila Prabhupada's different books express different moods of Srila Prabhupada. So often when we look at the purports of the Bhagavad Gita, then it's almost like Srila Prabhupada giving a public lecture to new people about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. When we hear the purports of Srimad Bhagavatam, then they're almost like Srila Prabhupada in a morning class speaking to the devotees about the practice of Krishna consciousness. And sometimes it's said that the purports of Chaitanya Charitamrita are in the mood of Srila Prabhupada in a very informal setting, in a room conversation, sometimes speaking in a very personal way. In the purports of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada reveals many personal things also. He talks about people who have criticized him. He talks about the struggles that he's gone through. And he talks about the modern day Krishna consciousness movement. So he speaks in a very personal way. So all of the different purports of Srila Prabhupada's books carry a different mood, and Chaitanya Charitamrita is definitely a very personal mood of Srila Prabhupada. Why is Srila Prabhupada giving all this information about all of these places and their exact location? Because ultimately Srila Prabhupada is encouraging all the devotees to go there. These places that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited are all tirthas. The word tirtha, obviously we know it means a holy place. The word tirtha actually means a bridge, a connection point. A tirtha or a holy place is a bridge from this world to the other world. It's a connection point by which the people who are residing in the earthly realm can begin to approach the spiritual stratosphere. So the tirtha is an amazing wealth for any Vaishnav. Of course, there are different types of tirtha. There is a non-moving tirtha, which is a holy place. But the Vaishnav is known as the moving tirtha. As Vidura we're reading about now, Vidura is glorified by Yudhisthira Maharaj. Bhavadvida bhagavatas tirtha bhuta svayam vibhu. O Vidura, you are like a holy place personified. You are a moving holy place. Because just by coming in your vicinity, people can access great spiritual wealth. So the holy places are very, very important. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us to go to the holy places. In his childhood, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his early years, went to Gaya. Gaya is a very, very holy place, as we know, not just for Hindus or those of Sanatana Dharma, but even for those from Buddhist backgrounds and other faiths. So there's Gaya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided to go to Jagannath Puri, another very, very holy place known as Viraha Kshetra, the place of separation. Straight after arriving, we'll read about when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arrives at Jagannath Puri, he goes all the way around South India. He walks for 2 years, 4,000 miles, all the way round South India and back up to Jagannath Puri. And then we'll later on see how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu repeatedly tries to go to Vrindavan, the most holy place. It's said that just as Krishna is the source of all incarnations, Vrindavan is the source of all holy places. So all holy places can be found in Vrindavan. So Mahaprabhu tries many, many times to go to Vrindavan like that. So it was the desire of the acharyas to establish holy places for the benefit of humanity. Mahaprabhu himself rediscovered so many holy places, and Mahaprabhu also gave instructions to the Goswamis. Bhakta bhakti Krishna prem tatvera nidhar Vaishnavera kritya ara Vaishnava achar. Krishna bhakti Krishna prem seva pravartan lupta tirtha udara ara vairagya shikshan. These were the instructions that Mahaprabhu gave to the Goswamis. Bhakta Bhakti Krishna Prem Tatviranidhar. First instruction to the Goswamis, write down all of the truths about devotional service and love for Krishna and write these into books. Vaishnavera Kritya or Vaishnava Achar. Next instruction, teach the whole world about how a Vaishnava should act and teach the whole world about what Vaishnava character and culture should be. Krishna Bhakti, Krishna Prema Seva Pravartan. Third instruction, establish temples where people can serve Krishna and where they can develop their bhakti and develop their innate love for Krishna. And then, fourth instruction, Lupta Tirtha. Excavate the holy places so that for generations to come people can go to the holy places. And final instruction, Vairagya Shikshan. Live the life of an ideal renunciate. Show people what real purity is in the life of a renunciate by giving that example yourself. So these were the instructions given to the Goswamis to excavate the holy places. And we see all the acharyas also followed in the same footsteps. In fact, all of these places, we're hearing now that Mahaprabhu walked to many places. When Mahaprabhu walked around South India, he walked to many places. And what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to do is establish Pada Pitas. Pada Pitas means places where he installed marble carvings of Mahaprabhu's feet to mark the different places where Mahaprabhu went. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's desire was to establish 108 Pada Pitas all around the places that Mahaprabhu visited. If you ever have the fortune of going to Prayag, Allahabad, where the Kumbh Mela takes place, I had the fortune of going there about 10 years ago. And there we know Mahaprabhu went on multiple occasions to Prayag. We know in Prayag at Dashashvamedha Ghat, Mahaprabhu instructed Rupa Goswami. And there you can see one of these Pada Pitas that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur installed, commemorating the place where Mahaprabhu came. So these holy places are very, very important for the Vaishnavas. Srila Prabhupada wanted the devotees to go there. They say one should go to the holy place. There's three main reasons why you would go to a holy place, like Vrindavan, for example. One main reason is the place that you go to die. If you go to Vrindavan today, then there are many people who just come to the holy places just to live out their final days. Because yes, the Tirtha, the connecting place to the divine abode. So what better place to leave the world than the place which is known as the bridge to the spiritual world? So yes, people come there and then vow never to leave and to live their final days in Vrindavan and finally leave their body in Vrindavan. So that's one reason why people go to the holy dham. The other reason people go to the holy dham, second main reason, is to perform sacrifice or devotional service. Because it said whatever service or sacrifice is performed in a holy place is magnified many, many times. Because the holy place is full of spiritual potency. So every holy place is magnifying. Like Mayapur is known as Audarya Dham, the place of great magnanimity. So Mahaprabhu already is so magnanimous, and then the holy dham of Mayapur is so magnanimous. And it said that in Mayapur dham, when you're sleeping and lying down, Mahaprabhu takes it that you're paying dandavats. And so just by sleeping in Mayapur, it's almost like you get the benefits of paying dandavats. Not that you should sleep all day, but that is the power of a holy place. The spiritual potency of one's activities are magnified. When we go to Vrindavan, then there's generally when people go to Vrindavan and you go on Parikrama, the first place you go to is the temple of Madan Mohan. That's like tradition. Because Madan Mohan is known as the deity of Krishna that is attracting even Kamadev. So we go to that deity first to say, while I'm in the holy dham, please allow my lust, anger, greed, and all of these anartas within me. Please, Krishna, you take them away so I can focus. And Madan Mohan is situated on Dvadasaditya hill. And this is the hill that after Krishna jumped into the Yamuna and subdued the Kaliya serpent, he came back onto that hill and he was resting, but he was shivering because he had just come out of the Yamuna. So the one sun expanded into 12 to heat up Krishna's body. And the Vaishnavas, before they go on pilgrimage, they go to that place because they pray to the Lord that just as one sun expanded into 12, allow the potency of my devotion and the intensity of my bhajan in Vrindavan to be 12 times stronger than what it normally is. Because that's why you come to a holy place, to intensify your bhajan. And the third major reason that one goes to the holy dham is for inspiration. Mahaprabhu often instructed some of his followers, don't go to Vrindavan for more than a few days. Just go for a few days and leave. Go for a few days, get some inspiration, and then leave. Don't stay too long. So most of us are following in that line. We are going to the holy place to get inspiration. So in this way, the holy places, as Srila Prabhupada is giving us all this information in Chaitanya Charitamrita about these places, it makes a difference when we go here, because it makes everything personal. Like now we're reading about Advaita Acharya. I don't know if anyone here has ever been to Bangladesh, but we had the fortune to go to Bangladesh. And in Bangladesh, you can go to Sylhet, which is right on the border. Quite a remote place. And this is the place where Advaita Acharya was born, like advented. So I tell you, to get to this place where Advaita Acharya advented, it's a mission. You have to take a car, then you have to take a rick, and it's a bumpy road, and it's almost like going through forest. You have to get to this place. And then you go there, and at least from an external point of view, there's not much there. I mean, okay, there's a temple and a few things, but really it doesn't feel like there's much there. So we did this whole endeavor to go to this place, and then we went there. And I'm sure many devotees in their mind had the thought that, why did we come all the way here? I don't know how much difference it made coming here. Anyway, a few days later, we returned to Mayapur, and we were taking darshan of Panchatattva. It was in front of Panchatattva and taking darshan, and I was looking at Gauranga, looking at Nityananda. And then I turned to Advaita Acharya, because we had just obviously gone to that place. And then just as I was taking darshan of Advaita Acharya, Kadambakanna Maharaj walked right behind me, because we had all gone together to Sylhet. And he looked at me and he said, see, now when you see Advaita Acharya, when you take darshan of Advaita Acharya, it's different. You have more relationship. You have more connection because you visited the place where he lived. You heard about him. You connected with him now in a more personal way. So when you see the deity of Advaita Acharya, it's not just, Advaita Acharya. It's much more personal. So that is the advantage of going to the holy places, that everything becomes so much more personal. Like when you go to Vrindavan for the first time, then you think wow, all of these things that we read about in Krishna, it actually happened. And this is where Krishna did it. And you picture it and it becomes so much more real. And that is ultimately Krishna consciousness, to have that very real personal interaction with the Lord. So that's just a little bit about the pilgrimage that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes on and why Srila Prabhupada in his purport gives so much detail on where to find all of these places. Now what I'm going to do, I'm just going to go back because I want to pick up on one theme here. The one theme that I want to pick up on is the fact that Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, sometimes does very, very confusing things. Now, if you look at the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, sometimes it's very difficult to understand why he's doing certain things to his devotees. Let's take this instance. Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya is Mahavishnu, we know, but at least in this context, the greatest devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's the one that brought Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to this world. Tulsi dalama trena jalasya chulukena va vikrinete svamatmanam bhaktebhyo bhaktavatsala. He said that Advaita Acharya read this verse in the Gautamiya Tantra that if you simply offer some tulsi leaves and Ganga Jal to the Lord, he's bhaktavatsala, very easily pleased, and he'll do whatever you want. So he started doing it, offering to his Shaligram Shila the tulsi leaves, the Ganga Jal, and he petitioned the Lord to come, and because of his bhakti, the Lord came. So Advaita Acharya is the one that brought the Lord to this world. He had so much love for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what does Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu do? He tells Advaita Acharya, I'm leaving, I'm going. And you know what? You may never see me again. Advaita Acharya is weeping. How can you do this to me? Mahaprabhu is telling him, you remain calm. If you don't remain calm, if you start crying, what's going to happen to everyone else? So Advaita Acharya is completely confused. Why is the Lord doing this to me? Sometimes Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very confusing. Let's take another example. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes to South India. He comes to the house of the Kurma Brahmana. The Kurma Brahmana is learned. He knows Shastra. So when he sees Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says to Mahaprabhu, I want to leave everything behind and I just want to surrender unto you. After all, that's the philosophy, right? Sarva dharman parityaja mamekam saranam vraja. Exactly, yeah. That's the one, Niskanchana. So he comes. So Mahaprabhu walks into the Kurma Brahmana's house. The Kurma Brahmana is like, I know Shastra. So here it is. Here is Krishna right in front of me. So here I am, Krishna, sarva dharman parityaja, I'll give up all of my dharma, all of my family, mom, and I'll just surrender unto you. I'm ready to come with you. I'm ready to go. What does Mahaprabhu tell him? Aiche bat, how you speak like this? You want to come with me? Don't be mad. Stay at home. Jare deka tare kaha Krishna upadesh amara agyaya guru hanatare edesh. Just whoever you see, whoever you speak to, tell them about Krishna, you'll be okay. Now, it's like you have to think about this for a moment. Imagine you're at home, like online there are many viewers. Imagine right now Krishna knocks on your door. You open the door, Krishna's right there. And you say to Krishna, Gokulananda, I want to give up. Okay, I'm coming with you. This is it. This is the goal of life, right? Vedesh cha sarve raham eva vedyo. The whole goal of it is you. So that's it. Okay, I'm here. You've come. I'm here. I'm ready to come with you. And then Krishna says like, no, no, just stay here. Tell people about me. And now I'm leaving. You may never see me again. It's like bewildering. It's completely confusing. Why would you do that? Why did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu do that? It's confusing. At least to Kurma Brahmana, very confusing. Take another example. Pratraparudra Maharaj. Now, Pratraparudra was the king of Puri. He was a great Vaishnav. When he saw Mahaprabhu, he fell in love. When he saw all the devotees, his heart was captured by all the Vaishnavas. Pratraparudra was such a humble Vaishnav, he was ready to make any arrangement for the Vaishnavas. And Pratraparudra so much wanted to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not even come in the proximity of Pratraparudra simply because he was a king. Pataparudra was so bewildered. He said, Yadi se Mahaprabhur napai kripadhan, kiba raja kiba deha sabaya karan. Yadi se Mahaprabhur napai kripa. If I don't get Mahaprabhu's mercy, kiba raja kiba deha sabaya karan, my body, my wealth, my kingdom, my assets, my everything, sabaya karan is completely useless. It doesn't mean anything if I don't get the mercy of Mahaprabhu. The devotees were like, Mahaprabhu won't see you because you're a king. This is the same Mahaprabhu who then says, Naham vipro nacha narapatir napi vaisho nasudro. You're not a sannyasi, you're not a householder, you're not any of these are just all external titles. Really, we're all servants of Krishna. So don't get too hung up about all of these external titles. But then he says to Pataparudra, I won't see you because you're a king. And Pataparudra, we were like, but that's just an external title. I'm your servant. I'm your das. Mahaprabhu won't see him. Confusing. Why is Mahaprabhu acting like that? Take another example. Kala Krishna Das. Kala Krishna Das travels with Mahaprabhu all over South India, and he has a little bit of weakness. He gets attracted by the Bhattaharis, who are like traveling ladies. I mean, in Kali Yuga, to get attracted by the opposite gender, I mean, is not like unknown of. Like, these things happen sometimes. Mahaprabhu comes back to home base and he says, forget it, I'm never going to see, banish him. I don't want to see his face. Devotees are like, wow, that's harsh. I mean, we're singing in front of Mahaprabhu. Patita pavana hetu davayavatar. Mahaprabhu, you are the deliverer of the most fallen. There's no one more merciful than you. And then here is Mahaprabhu, just banish him. Just banish him. If you think that's bad, imagine the example of Chota Haridas. Chota Haridas, one day Mahaprabhu was taking prasadam. Balaramacharya was serving him. Mahaprabhu looked at the rice. He said, who brought this rice? Where did this rice come from? He said, Chota Haridas. He went to beg for these alms. Chota Haridas brought these alms. Where did he get them from? He went to the house of Madhavi Devi and from there he begged. Madhavi Devi, very advanced Vaishnav, elderly. He said he went to the house. Later on he said to the devotees, I don't want to see the face of Chota Haridas. Because he's looked at a lady. Confusing. Now the point I'm making here is that Mahaprabhu's activities, Krishna's activities, are sometimes very confusing, isn't it? But we know when we read all of these pastimes with the commentaries of the acharyas discussing amongst Vaishnavas, then we can figure out, oh, there was a deeper lesson. There was a deeper arrangement that the Lord was making. There was something more that he was trying to bring out in the relationship. Although it was confusing in the first instance, later on when we look back at the whole thing, we can see the Lord had an amazing arrangement going on in each one of these pastimes. Sometimes it said, Krishna is like a chess player. We're like the pawns on the board. So if you're a pawn on a chessboard, all you may be able to see is, oh my God, there's a horse there and it's about to attack me. That's what you see, because you're just in one square on the chessboard. But Krishna is like the chess player. Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. The ultimate chess player, Ki Jai. So Krishna is like the chess player. He's not like the pawn who just sees the horse in front of him. He's the one who sees the whole board. So he knows where all the pieces are situated, so he can see the full picture. But we're like the pawn on the board. Krishna is the chess player. You see, we may be able to see the immediate moves of the chess game, but the chess player, they can think 5 or 10 moves ahead. Isn't it? Anyone here ever play chess? Any good chess players here? Yeah. The greatest chess player of all time was Garry Kasparov. Just in case you didn't know that. Garry Kasparov said, most of the time, I think 5 moves ahead. I mean, such a brain. Can you imagine thinking 5 moves ahead in a chess game? If I do that, he could do that, and then I'll do that, and then he'll do that, and then I could do that. But if I do that, then he may do that. I mean, it's like inconceivable. And then Garry Kasparov once said, actually, if I want to think deeply, then I can think 10 or 12 moves ahead. I can think 10 or 12 moves ahead in a chess game. But anyway, Garry Kasparov got beat. He got beaten by the IBM supercomputer. They created a computer called, I think, Deep Blue? Deep Blue, right? They created a computer, IBM, to challenge Garry Kasparov in a chess match. And he lost. He got defeated by a computer. But the point here is that Krishna is like a chess player. Although sometimes his moves seem to be very confusing, behind everything, he has an amazing plan. So we'll just make this a little bit interactive. Put your hands up if Krishna has ever done something in your life or in the world around you that's made you confused. Okay, everyone. So the good news is that's what all of us in this room have in common with the characters of Chaitanya Charitamrita, because they were also confused. Now put your hands up if when Krishna has sent a confusing situation, it has never affected your enthusiasm or determination one little bit. Put your hand up. If it's never affected your enthusiasm or determination, Krishna's confusing arrangements. Okay, no one puts their hand up. And that's the difference between all of us and the characters of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this is the point. Take it for sure that Krishna is going to do confusing things in our life. That's for sure. Now the only question is, how are we going to be able to react to the confusing situation of Krishna in such a way that our enthusiasm and our determination is not affected one little bit? So now I want you to advise me. I'm a person, I'm confused at what Krishna's doing in my life. What thought process do I need to go through? What advice would you give me to help me continue on in a determined and enthusiastic way despite the fact that Krishna is doing something that I can't figure out at all? Yeah? You get the question? So what advice would you give to me if I'm experiencing confusion? I am, actually. What advice would you give to me so that I can carry on in a determined and enthusiastic way? Okay, Leo.
You're in Maya, Prabhu.
I'm in Maya. Thank you for diagnosing my situation. Now can you give me some cure? Anyone? How would you advise a confused person?
If you have any love in your heart for God, love God, just have it. Is this safe? scriptures, in the Bible, actually, he says that all things work together for good. Even if it doesn't seem like good at the time, ultimately it works. They work for good. All things.
Okay. So I understand that. I know the philosophy. But what practical things can you give me that I can do so that my confusion doesn't affect my determination, enthusiasm to continue on in spiritual life? Give me something practical I can do. Okay. Okay. And the way you said it, Cyrus, is definitely very reassuring. Thank you. But, however, at the same time, having said that, what other things can we do to deal with the confusion that Krishna, that we experience from Krishna? What things do we do? Because frankly, let's face it, each one of us, every Vaishnav is actually getting confused all the time about Krishna's dealings. And we know it. We know that Krishna's the master chess player. We know that he's got a plan. We hear it every other class. But still we get confused and bewildered. So what do we need to do? Yes, Maharaj. Oh, the battery's gone. Okay, let's, because we need to, because it will be internet. It's just been online.
Hare Krishna. So Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Suhridam Sarabhutanam, that he is the best friend of all. And if we really have faith, then we should be looking at the silver lining and understand that no matter what is happening, it is for my benefit. And if I will be looking for benefits in this situation, that will help me to get out of confusion.
Okay, so this is point number one. If you're feeling confused by what's happening in your life, then point number one, we can write these down if you want to. Always look for the benefit in this situation. Because the tendency is in a confusing situation, we tend to focus on everything that's negative or everything that's difficult or everything that is confusing and bewildering. And because that is consuming our consciousness so much, we're not able to see the flip side of what potential there may be. So just try to make that shift to try and see what is the potential in this situation.
I was going to say that in any conflicted situation, we can see the life of other great personalities, understand they were in much more deeper trouble than us, and get some inspiration that if they could do that, I'm literally nothing, you know. I mean, it's so easy for me here.
So point number two is look at how other great Vaishnavas dealt with the situation. That's why the scriptures are full of Vaishnavas who went through confusing, bewildering, difficult situations, because Krishna precisely through them wanted to show us how we should react to the situation. So sometimes people question, why do the pure devotees have to suffer? The pure devotees have to suffer to basically show us how we should deal with suffering. They show us the ideal example of how to react to the suffering. So that's another very, very nice point. Leo and then Godru.
What I found in this specific period that we're going through, speaking to a lot of devotees, what for me personally was that philosophy is good. Like philosophy is, it creates some kind of a anchor or stability. But I found that if there wasn't an emotional connection or an emotional catharsis, you would say, like that it didn't touch me emotionally, like in the heart, all the philosophy didn't really work. Even if I understood it on an intellectual level, if I didn't have an emotional, deep, heartful realization, the feelings were still there. I was still confused. So it's not so easy to get that. But if somehow we do speak to someone who has a deep realization, and he or her can kind of like transmit that into us. So on a heartful level, you actually understand that Krishna loves you, really. He really, like, there's nothing that he does that's bad for you. And he really loves you. And you really, on a real level, have a relationship with him. Then if you really feel that, if you really live in that, then kind of like the confusion is, okay, I don't understand what you're doing, but I know that you're good. I know that it will be good. That was my realization just recently.
So I'm really glad Leo raised this point, because we talked about this, that all the philosophy in the world that Krishna is the greatest chess player, he knows he's arranging something amazing, all the philosophy in the world, it may satisfy our mind or our intellect, but it doesn't actually, the heart still feel like, oh, but why Krishna is doing that? The heart is not satisfied. So we were talking about how when we're actually enchanted, absorbed, completely conquered by Krishna's character, his gratitude, his kindness, his sensitivity. That's why hearing about Krishna is so important, because when we're more and more convinced about how amazing Krishna is, then that's the ultimate protection, because Krishna has already conquered your heart. So then when bewildering or confusing things come, if you have a very good friend and they do something totally seemingly out of character, the immediate thing you think is, okay, there must be something behind that. You never doubt them. That's not where your mind goes first. Your mind doesn't go first to doubting them. Your mind goes first to the point that there must be some reason why they did that. See, where does your mind go first? Your mind will go to doubting them if you don't have a deep relationship. Your mind will go to, no, there must be a reason behind it if you have a relationship. So there's no replacement for having a deep connection with Krishna and being conquered by his character, because then you know Krishna is amazing. Why would he ever do anything harmful? Godruma?
Thank you. Sometimes we get proud and we think we're in control, you know? So Krishna puts us in a situation where we become bewildered, we're confused, we don't know what to do. So that's good for us, because it humbles us, you know? And in the past, we can analyze in our own lives that we've had these situations before, and they've been like a brick wall or devastating, apparently, you know. But somehow or other, Krishna has helped us to overcome it and learn something. So in the past, and then Krishna is our, like Leo Prabhu was saying, Krishna is our friend, and ultimately, whatever he does is for our benefit. So then, whatever is happening to us, we have to have the faith that this is ultimately for my good, because the parent will not, a true and loving parent will not do something which is for the detriment of their children. So then that is there. And also, in that times of confusion, that is a really good opportunity to actually be introspective, to reflect and to pray, and you know, to ask for, to ask the Lord, please, what do you want me to see in this situation? You know, what are you trying to teach me? And then to pray, to chant, to take shelter, and then get the association of people, of Vaishnavas, of devotees who have strong faith and who have been through many challenging circumstances, but they haven't, their faith hasn't wavered, you know. So that is something practical, and through that then you can overcome the confusion and challenges. And as always happens, whenever there's some difficulty and there's challenge, the if you stick with it, stick with the process of bhakti, and you remain faithful, then the rewards that you get from that are amazing.
So I just wanted to kind of open this up just to get your feedback. That was very useful. So just as a summary of that, the Lord is confusing in the way he interacts with his devotees, at least from our point of view. Ultimately, we understand that Krishna is the, as I said, the ultimate arranger, the ultimate chess player. He's ahead of the game. He knows more moves ahead than we can even begin to comprehend. And when we're facing confusing situations, here were some amazing things that the Vaishnava said. Cyrus talked about the philosophy and how we should always know philosophically, be strong, that there's always some superior arrangement behind it. Maharaj talked about how we should always, instead of focusing on the confusing, bewildering, difficult, negative aspects, seemingly negative aspects of your situation, try and switch your consciousness and look at the positives. Arun talked about how we should look at the lives of great devotees and how they faced the confusion and dealt with it and embraced it with grace. Leo talked about how we need to have a deeper connection with Krishna overall, so that we have faith in Krishna as a person, as a loving person. Because when you have faith in the person, then even if there are confusing activities, it will never lead the mind to doubt, but will always lead to one thinking, there must be something behind it. And Godruma also reiterated many of those points and talked about how if we're able to face confusion, then we'll ultimately develop greatly from that. I just wanted to add a few other things that we may want to consider. Prayer is an amazing thing. When we're in a confusing situation and we pray, we try to ask Krishna to understand, what am I supposed to learn from this? What am I supposed to, how am I supposed to evolve in this situation? Prayer is a very, very amazing tool that maybe many of us don't utilize as much as we could. Another thing I want to say is when we go through confusing situations, another thing that can help is look back in your life at how many other confusing situations were there and how in time everything became revealed. Because when we look back and see, oh, that was a very difficult time, but this came out of it. Oh, I couldn't accept that plan of Krishna, but later on I realized. Then when you see so many examples of Krishna's ingenuity in your life, then when Krishna does something confusing, you think like, okay, well, in the past he was always right, so why not now? So we can always look back. And then maybe another thing is just to always talk with devotees when you have confusion, because they say it's very difficult to see the picture when you're inside the frame. So within our own emotional turmoil, it's very difficult to understand what's happening, but someone who's separate from that, looking in, can give us a perspective that maybe we would never be able to grasp on our own. So Advaita Acharya, all of these Vaishnavas, they were seemingly treated in very confusing ways by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a great plan behind it. And the ultimate plan behind everything that Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does is to bring the devotee closer to him. So even when Mahaprabhu is physically walking away from someone, the ultimate point is he wants to bring their hearts closer together. because in that physical separation, the union of the heart becomes much more intense and stronger. So all of these confusing situations ultimately lead to an increased relationship with Krishna, providing we're able to digest it in the appropriate way. So those were just some points I wanted to raise. I don't know if there are any comments, questions, or anything else anyone would like to ask or add at this point.
Harishabhul, amazing class. Just 2 points which I wanted to add. One is establishing the path seven with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He established all the places where Mahaprabhu went. So Srirangam is one of those places where I went and I saw the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The other point was when Leo Prabhu was speaking. So yesterday when I was reading the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and you know, 18th chapter is the summary, is just man manabhu, sarvadharma praja, boom boom boom, is like, and then at the end Krishna says that, Arjuna, have you heard me? Have you heard with rapt attention? And was just so, you have just so, like, devote to me, surrender to me, think of me, and then at the end just goes so soft and so nice and says, have you listened with rapt attention? And just, so it just came to my mind when Leo Prabhu was speaking that we can have all the philosophy, but the personal touch and the personal feeling is so important because it makes it even more sweet and it can actually penetrate our heart even more. So I thought I'll just share that.
Thank you for the amazing class. I just had a question. That it said that there's no difference between Mayapur and Vrindavan, because earlier we were talking about the holy dhams. So, like, on one side it said there's no difference between Mayapur and Vrindavan, but in another side it said, well, or, you know, Mayapur is Adhorya, Adhorya Dham, means Adhorya, merciful, most merciful, like, because you're paying obeisances in Vrindavan, it's not considered you're not sleeping in Vrindavan, you're not considered paying Dhanvat. So it's kind of like, it's the same, but it's not the same. Can you comment on that?
Yes, this is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Simultaneously one and different. Yes, they're one in the sense that their spiritual potency is not different. One is not higher than the other. They're different in the sense that just as each of Krishna's manifestations have different personalities, each dham has almost its own personality. So Vrindavan is like Tapo Bhumi. It's like the place of austerity. Whatever you do, and just as I said, Vrindavan, Ayodhya walked in, Vrijavasi. Vrindavan, whatever you do to try and be comfortable in Vrindavan, it just never works. Like one, I usually go to Vrindavan in January and it's like freezing. So one year I went, I took like 3 heaters in my suitcase. Three of these heaters. And then the first day I put the heater in and, you know, it tripped out all the power in the whole hotel thing. And then I got one of these like regulator, you know, like plugs. And then, you know, then I put the second heater in because the first one had burned out. I put the second one in and it burnt the whole plug out. And I just thought, I'm not even going to try and put the third one in because Vrindavan is Tapo Bhumi. It's the place of austerity. Whereas Mayapur is not like that. It's a different place. And even we go, we feel a different, something different from each dham. So, yes, they're non-different, Vrindavan or Mayapur. But they have their own personality. So Vrindavan is known as the place of Madhurya, the sweetness of Krishna. Mayapur is known as the place of Adarya, great compassion, magnanimity, mercy. And Puri is known as the place of Viraha, or separation, deep separation. in each dham, different substances are said to be powerful. So in Vrindavan, the dust, Vraja, Vraja Renu, is said to be very powerful. In Mayapur Kirtan, anyone who chants, very powerful. And in Jagannath Puri, prasadam. Everything is prasad. They say in Puri you don't even have to offer, right? Everything is offered already. I mean, so very, very beautiful. So each dham has its own personality, but each dham is equal in potency, like that. Okay, so I think we finished there. So thank you so much for your attention. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.